Welcome to the ICTA podcast, where we think together about unity and solidarity, or ICTA, on campus. In the ICTA podcast, we take time out to listen to students as they share their stories about what has made them feel powerful and powerless in their university journeys, and to hear their thoughts on practical steps that we can take to create more inclusive spaces at UFE. Let's learn differently together. ICTA. Welcome to ICTA, a podcast about creating unity by understanding different learning experiences here at the University of the Fraser Valley. I am very grateful to be here in the studio at CIVL at UFE, which is located on Stalotomach, the sacred land of the people of the river. And today I have the great pleasure of chatting with Raidel Kawile, a general studies student from the Philippines. Welcome, Raidel.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. So we'll start with an easy question today. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Okay, like you said, my name is Raidel. I'm from the Philippines. I'm 36 years old, I think. Married, two kids. I came here on a study permit. My whole family's here. My wife works as a ECEA at a daycare. I have a son who's 3 and a daughter who's 5. And yeah, I'm in the general studies diploma here in UFB.
Nice. And so I know that you came here in 2022, is that right?
Yes, just right at the end of 2022, December 26th, we got here.
Wow. And so tell us a little bit about that journey. What was that like, getting ready to come and arriving?
Well, at first, it was kind of surreal. Like, you don't even feel that it's happening already. Especially, it's a Christmas week, so we were still celebrating with our families. And the way we celebrate Christmas in the Philippines is, it starts December 24 in the evening, and then it goes all to like whatever time you want it to finish. So, from December 24th. Up until the wee hours of December 25th, we were celebrating Christmas, and then a few hours of sleep. And then the day of December 25, that's when we started packing. So from December 25 up until the flight, we were awake. And it was a good thing because our flight was a direct flight. I think it was 13 hours. We got to sleep on the plane. And when we woke up, it's still a few hours to go, but then as the plane entered Canada, we opened the window, like everything was white, and it's, oh, this is it. It's not a dream. It's not like looking forward. It's not wishful thinking. This is it. We're landing, and we landed at Vancouver Airport. Our friends picked us up. That was the first time I felt the winter air when we walked out of the airport, and I was like, oh, I like this, because growing up in the Philippines, like Philippines is all summer, so. I'm kind of sick of it. If I can say that, I've grown tired of it just a little bit. So when I felt the winter air, it's like, oh, wow, I like this. Like, I didn't know what I was saying at the time because it was just like walking out of the airport to the car. Like, you had a few minutes of exposure. And then a few weeks after, you know, when we started getting settled in, I'm going to school and then looking for jobs and stuff like that. And we had to walk to the bus stop. Okay, this is not so fun. So yeah, great decision making on our part. Mm. Like, come here in the winter, right?
Well, and you left your kids at home, right?
Yes, just me and my wife first, so we can learn the ropes. And we didn't want to like be groping in the dark with, you know, two kids. Mm. So they stayed in the Philippines for 3 months, I think. Mm-hmm. When we felt that we were ready. Well, we weren't ready, but we felt like, you know, I think it's time.
Wow, I can't imagine leaving my one-year-old for 3 months. So that must have been so difficult.
It was. Like, every time thank goodness we have video chat now. Mm-hmm. And, like, every time we spoke to them, because of the time difference, either way, it was always, like, we were tired. Mm-hmm. And then you had to talk to your kids, like, from far away. Especially with my wife, she just really had to struggle to keep her composure. Everything's happy, they're laughing and stuff like that. And then as soon as they hung up, she just be in tears, like, oh my goodness, I miss them so much. And I mean, I thank the Lord that it was just for that specific period. Like, it could have so happened that, you know, something went wrong and we weren't able to bring them over as soon as we did. Like, 3 months is nothing compared to other stories that we hear. Like, they've been away from their families for years, sometimes even decades. So that's really a blessing in and of itself, right?
Yeah, for sure. And so, thinking about the Philippines, maybe not all of our listeners know a lot about the Philippines. So I did look up a few little facts to keep myself educated for today. So the Philippines is actually about 7,000 islands, from what I understand. That's a lot of islands. And the official languages are Filipino and English.
Yeah.
But there's over 150 other languages.
There's a lot, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of languages. And so which languages do you speak?
Primarily, it's the Filipino or Tagalog, and then English, and then our own dialect from our province is called Kapampangan, and our province is called Pampanga, and like I think you did a bit of research about it. It's derived from the root word Pampang, which literally means, I think, a riverbank, and my city, Angeles City, is one of the central cities of Pampanga. So yeah, it's very crowded.
Oh, yeah.
I think you made a quick comparison with the population.
Yeah, I did. I had a look, and so there's approximately 1,000 people per square mile in the Philippines versus 11 people per square mile in Canada.
That's how bad it is. I mean, bad, but it is. It is in some aspect. It's not very good to have that many people. That's one of the things that surprised me, like in a pleasant way, when we got here was like the space. First of all, traffic. I remember this when we got here. I counted the days until I heard a car honk. It was 7 days. We've been in Canada 7 days before I heard someone. And it wasn't even like the angry honk. It was like the boop, like something like that. That was crazy. I was like, boop, oh, there it is. Finally, I heard it. It's 7 days.
Wow.
And wherever you go, there's parking. That's for me, I always appreciate that. Like,
We don't even realize the benefits and the small things that we enjoy sometimes. It's a good reality check for us to remember these things. Yeah, but it's so interesting to me that in some ways, you know, the language that you speak and the area, you are also the people of the river, and you made your way to a place where the people of the river also live.
Yeah.
So interesting how these things kind of align sometimes.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so many interesting things we could talk about, but I think I want to talk a little bit more about your university experience.
Here we go.
We're getting into it. So one thing that I discovered when I looked on a Plyboard platform, which is an international education platform, they said that in 2022, the average study permit for Filipino students was for students who were aged 31. That was the average age. And that's a lot older than most international students. And of course, that was also your case.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'd love to hear a little bit about what was that like coming to university, maybe surrounded by people that were a little bit younger, particularly the international students here.
I'm trying to think of the word, but you're just older, that's it. It doesn't mean anything. But you see it in their approach to studies. Because for me, this is my second time in college. I've been there, done that, I graduated, I had a degree. For a lot of them, like, this is their first time in college, right? So this is going to be your degree. This is going to be your title, your first title. And it kind of feels like sometimes frustrating is the word I would use. Like, especially with the booming case of AI. When I first got here, the professors barely mentioned AI. Like, they used to mention it in passing. Okay, when you try to work on this assignment, don't use AI, blah, blah, blah. That was the end of it. But as the semesters went by, it sounded like they were really getting serious with the shakedown. I'm always warning students, like, don't use AI. We can spot them from a mile away. Don't submit your work, blah blah blah. And it kind of maybe saddened me a bit because AI is a very helpful tool if you use it the right way. One of my previous jobs, they had kids in college as well, and one time during dinner, it came up as a topic of conversation. And what I heard them saying about it is the main problem with it is you use AI in school, okay, you get away with it, but once you're in the real world and no more AI, like you're this good on paper, no, do the job. And then suddenly, oh, no, I can't do it because you never really did the work in the first place, so you didn't learn anything. And that's what saddens me a bit, because I don't think a lot of students have that like future outlook, like the effects of what they're doing now. Basically, I think all they need, I just need to pass, I just need the diploma, I just need the paper, and then I can take it from there. That's maybe something that comes with age, is because you've experienced some more things than they did. And I couldn't blame them. I believe I was like that when I was that age, or maybe even worse. And I'm thankful that I went through a stage in my life where, I dealt with the consequences, and I was able to get myself back in the right direction. So now, like, you've seen the other side, you don't want to go back to it. And when you see people trying to, like, "That's okay, I can do it," I'm like, who am I to tell you, "Hey, no, don't do that. Make the mistake so you can learn the lesson." That's just how I choose to look at it, because, like, who am I to tell them, "Don't do that, don't do this." And maybe to condense it, like, maybe it's the difference in perspective being in a class at this age versus their age.
And I think that that kind of transitions nicely into our first question. That's really the core of of our show today, and that's, what made you feel powerful at UFE? And I know you talked to me about a number of different instructors that brought different perspectives, and the different ways that they made you feel maybe powerful or that you felt supported by them. So if you could talk a little bit about that.
I guess one of the things that made me feel powerful here is that your work is recognized. Your work is appreciated, I would say. Like, the amount of effort you put into it equals the whatever grade you want, right? I think it was Saeed who said that, like, I don't make the grades. You make the grades because of how well you do the work, right? So I just compute. I think that's how he put it, which is like very fair. If you want a good grade, you put in good work. It can't be like you're just chilling and then you expect an A or 100 or whatever. So I guess that's one of the things that made me feel powerful, is because of like I said, my experience before, it kind of translated to this outlook or this perspective or this skill in prioritization or whatever. And it translates into my work.
And so what I'm hearing you say is that you feel that they gave you control over, your outcomes, and that they saw your work and they saw you as someone who was a hard worker and who could be successful. And then that was the power piece there for you.
Yes, definitely. Because you can't really feel powerful with when there's always someone telling you what to do or how to do it, right? What happened was, the way I felt it was, okay, I want this, but it's up to you how you do it, when you do it, blah blah blah. Just at the end of the day, give me this. I like that, being able to work at my own pace and stuff. Like I said, being at my age, like I have a family, but for us, like people with family, you really need to be conscious about how much time you spend on each activity, right? So that control that you were mentioning is very empowering.
Yeah, having some sort of flexibility in the process to engage with it in the way that you can best manage. Yeah, absolutely. That makes a lot of sense. And Yeah, you're right. As a parent myself, I understand these things.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. And I know you also mentioned that in a few classes, you also learned sort of a different history of Canada that you hadn't learned before, and that was quite eye-opening for you. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Not just eye-opening, like, it was literally a jaw-dropping moment for me. It was with Dale. He went into the topic of residential schools. Like, that sort of thing isn't very new to me, because we experienced that ourselves, like, I think 300 plus years of colonization. But coming from, like, Canada, it's like, Canada has this stereotype of being the super nice guy. Like, if countries were people, I mean, that's all I ever knew Canada was, the nice guy. There would be pictures on the internet, like, making fun of how nice Canadians were, like, you know, even in protests, their placards had please or something, like, they were still polite, or like, street graffiti were like, have a nice day, something like that. And then you learn something like that, like residential schools, how they treated the students, what they did, like, just took them away from their families by force, and then they made them live in these schools and can't even speak with each other. If they were brother and sister, they had to be separated, and they couldn't even speak to each other. They couldn't use their native language. And a lot of these kids went missing, and the really sad part was the actual survivors. They interviewed them, and they had their own accounts of events that transpired during that time. And I was like, no, this happened? Like, this is Canada? They did this? And that was before that lesson, I was curious about, like, every event, there had to be, like, a land acknowledgement. And that explained it for me. It was sort of the reconciliation for trying to make up for what they did to the indigenous people before. So, yeah, first I felt was shock. It made sense of a lot of things, like that.
What you're highlighting for me right now is in the calls to action, one of the things that they asked for was to change citizenship education and the education that new immigrants receive. And increasingly, international students settlement education is being delivered by universities because that's the pathway that they're taking. And so when we think about university's role, I ask myself, you know, what if you hadn't taken that class? Where were you going to learn those things?
Exactly, yeah.
And so it's an interesting question for me, and something I think higher education probably needs to think about as we think about those calls to action and our involvement in them. Okay, so the other flip side of the question then is, what has made you feel powerless at UFE?
I think it's the fact that I think you put it like being a minority in the minority. This happens during the regular term, like when you have to wait for the professor to let you in, and students are standing outside in the hallway or wherever, and you look around, there's no other Filipino students. And that has happened to me, like, maybe 90% of the classes I took. If there were, say, 20 people in a class, and there's maybe like two Filipinos, just two, what I observed kept happening was we just kept to ourselves, and the other guys, you know, like, clustered up immediately with each other, and that's no trouble in itself. You know, they're just, maybe they knew each other from before class, or they know each other from outside university, but it's just a feeling of, oh, look at them, they're all buddy-buddy with each other. This one time that happened to me, I was waiting outside. I was one of the first people waiting outside the classroom. I think it was a finals, and we had to be assigned seats. I got there, I was one of the first people there, standing beside the door. And a group of these young students, one of them came and just stood directly in front of me, not even 12 inches. And I take that as, that's very disrespectful. Like, all this space around and you decide to stand in front of me. You have got to be doing that on purpose. But yeah, whatever. It's just, I'm not sure if doing that on purpose or you just have no concept of personal space. But in a few minutes, he gets together with his friends. I think they were 4 or 5, and they were taller than I am. So I was like completely blocked from the door, and they had their backpacks and stuff like that. I actually started to like touching me. And I had to like push back a little bit. Nothing violent, just, you know, hey, there's someone behind you. And at that moment, I was really contemplating to myself, should I say something? Like, to some people who hear this, they might say, no big deal. I mean, they blocked you, whatever. So what ended up happening was they got in first before me. And I was like, oh, yeah, okay, fine, no biggie. I just did the exam and then walked away. In my mind, like, yeah, it doesn't feel good, but get used to it, buddy. You're in a different country now. This is not home. You're here. Just be happy that you're here. Things like that are going to happen. This is not the last time. Just keep it in your mind that you're probably not even going to see these people again. Water under the bridge. Let it go, and you'll be the bigger man. Just, mm-hmm. And that's it. This is the only time I've recalled that event again. I'm happy with the path I chose. Like, I was thinking, like, should I report them? Should I do this, do that? Like, make a big deal out of it? No. If they do that now, if they do that to you, they probably do that to other people. If they don't get the lesson from you, they're gonna get the lesson from someone else. So just leave it like that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, sometimes that's what made me feel powerless. It's like, we're really a minority here. Like, I'm not aware of how many actual Filipino students are here at UFB, but they have to be less than the other nationalities here.
So. Yeah, and so certainly at UFB, that's the case. And but a minority that's growing. So, since the pandemic, Filipino immigration has been massively on the rise in Canada, actually. And there are currently 950,000 people of Filipino descent in Canada. So lots. But as you say, at UFE, certainly a minority. And what I hear you saying there is that this sort of being alone like that makes you feel like in those moments you can't speak up in the same way.
Exactly, yeah.
That you don't have the power to do that, and that you know, it's something that you have to live with because this isn't your home and it's not your country. And that, I think, is something that a lot of newcomers experience, this idea of not knowing when it's okay to stand up. And so that's something that I think, you know, as instructors, we can really think about how do we create more community in our classrooms so students don't feel like that, so they don't feel alone in that same way. And I think that transitions into our last question, which is, what advice do you have for faculty and staff for creating a more inclusive space here at UFE?
Oh man, kind of a tough one. Like, who am I to say them, like, to say that, yeah, this is what you should do or whatever. I think, especially with like the staff that I have experience with, like the instructors, keep doing what they're doing. They're great at it. Like, if some other students don't appreciate them, I do. I really appreciate it. Maybe because, like I said at the beginning, I have a different perspective. I have a different point of view on things. I think there's nothing more I can say to the professors here, because I think they're doing a really great job. And like, for example, this, what you're doing, this podcast, like inviting guests to hear their story, hear their, we never know, someone might need to hear stuff like this to just empower them or encourage them or, you know, just keep them going. So this is like, this is a very good platform. This is a very good activity that you came up with. So I think they're doing a great job. Keep it up. That's all I can say. Like, I'm not one to give advice. Like, who am I? Who wants to do that? So, yeah.
I think that reminds me that that, you know, there's a lot of principles around it's good to consult students and it's good to ask students for their ideas and their opinions, but it's not always, they don't always feel it's their place. But people can always share their stories,
and
we can learn a lot from those stories, as you say, and so creating space for that sharing in the classroom too.
Definitely. I've had like multiple experiences with them, like sharing classroom and professors just being empowering, and you should speak up like this, blah blah blah, stuff like that. It's all been very helpful. So, like I said, with the experience I've had with my past professors, like, you know, you guys are doing really great. I'm not gonna tell you to change anything. So,
we'll tell you what, we'll take it. Yeah. We'll take it. That's way too great. Okay, so then to wrap it up in the fall, I know we're expecting a lot of policy shifts for international students, and particularly there's going to be that reduction in the number of work hours that's possible. So I know that you're sort of still expecting to register in the fall, so not graduating yet. What's next for you, Rydell? Tell us, how is all this going to unfold for you in the coming semesters?
Oh, man, basically it's just going to be trying to survive, just trying to ride the waves. Like you said, expecting to register. Hopefully we have the money by then to for the tuition, and hopefully our employment situations continue to be stable, if not improving. And then that buys us more time to, you know, process what we need to process here to get settled and stuff like that. So yeah, it's just the grind. You just keep at it until you're where you want to be. Mm-hmm. So that's what's next for me. Keep working when you can. Go to school when you have to. I guess I'm a boring guy.
Yeah. Well, I know that in our conversations you had said, you know, the mental pressure of that uncertainty is just not something you can turn off.
Yeah.
Right? And it's a bit of a house of cards.
It is. It is. That's exactly how I feel. Because being here on permits, it's actually one of the reasons why the situation before, why I didn't want to just speak up, why I was telling myself, hey, just calm down. You know, this is not home. It's because of that, because of our situation here. I mean, we're here legally. Like, it's not like you can say that you're settled. You're not here indefinitely. You're here on because of their permission. Like they're allowing you to be here, and I see that, like I said before, as a house of cards. Like if one aspect crumbles, it's all gonna crash down. If I let my studies go, it's gonna cause problems for me with my documents or my papers, whatever. If I don't work enough, it's going to cause problems with our living situation. If I do any of those things too much, the family life suffers. If I try to do everything, then my health is going to take a hit. So everything is a balancing act. That's what I was referring to when I said it's the grind. Like, you have to just do everything, try to balance everything, and hopefully and just hope you don't tumble or you don't fall somewhere along the way, because at this point it's going to be very hard to pick things up. At this point, it's that easy. Like you said, a lot of the previous average age for Filipinos who do this was 31. I went at it at 35, and it was a big decision on my part, because my wife and I were talking about it. Like, we're good here. Are we going to leave? And we decided that, if we're going to do it anyway, let's do it now. Let's not delay it any further. You know, it has been a challenge in and of itself. Like, at this age, you uproot your life from one place and then you try to plant again on different grounds, and you expect to grow it. It's a challenge. And the main part of that is the mental pressure. Like, even when you're not doing anything, say you're at the park and you're spending time with kids or something like that, it doesn't mean that your problems went away. Mm-hmm. You're always there. Like, the second that something, you see something, it reminds you that, oh man, yeah, there's just something I need to worry about, or there's something I need to do, or whatever. It's there again. So, yeah, it's just a matter of compartmentalizing it. Okay, not now. I'll deal with you later. Now I have to do this, or now I have to think of this. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it's constant is the word, yeah.
And that can make it so challenging to focus in classes and on success and on so many things, right? Yeah. Well, Rydell, thank you so much for sharing your experiences today and all your powerful stories.
Well, thank you for giving me the chance to share.
Yeah.
This has been an amazing experience.
I'm so glad. And of course, we'll be looking for to hear more and find out how everything goes for you in the fall. Mm-hmm. And for listeners, if you have questions about today's episode, or you have ideas, or you have a story to share, feel free to reach out to me, Victoria Surtees. That's Victoria, Surtees, at ufv.ca. And please, if you did find this podcast interesting or useful, do tell a friend, and let's learn differently together. Thanks, and until next time.
ICTA is hosted by UFV's Teaching and Learning Center and sponsored by UFV International. Music by Saint Soldier.
No matter how long it takes us, no matter how much this world breaks us, may we live here in peace, live here as one, from Bolivia to Greece, from India to Canada and everywhere between. Namaste to everyone I see, namaste, I recognize that it's one, namaste, and the suffering is done. Namaste.